Hey, how are you doing? Are you struggling to relax and switch off from the hyperactivity of everyday life? Then take a quick dip with me, Suzanne Duckett, health and beauty journalist and author of my new book, Bathe, as we rediscover the oldest art of relaxation, while my guests bear all and share their helpful strategies for overcoming modern physical and mental challenges to help us chase away the blues. And we promise you won't be left behind. In this show, you'll experience each treatment side by side with us as we share the benefits, secrets, and sounds of bathing in various forms, gasping, squealing, and laughing along the way. Now, Claire Sanderson is joining me today. She is the editor of Women's Health magazine. Claire is an absolute expert on women's health, as you'd imagine, being the editor of such a magazine, but not just the physical side. What is fascinating about Claire is she is into the mental side of health as much as she is physical. She's from Wales, very down to earth. She says it as it is. So I thought it'd be brilliant to get her here to talk to us today, but to have a treatment that is going to really challenge her. It's called Poetry in Water, and it is a kind of, if you can imagine, yoga while you're held with someone in the water, is the only way I can describe it.
There's been research saying that the people who want to achieve, the most driven people in society, are the most prone to depression because in theory they're always disappointed with themselves, but they're never good enough, and that's absolutely me. We may live longer, but we become dependent. And one of the reasons for that is that our bones, osteoporosis, our lean muscle mass decreases rapidly because women, say over the age of 40, don't realise or have never really understood the benefits of weight training. But if we were to take HRT, that it does wonders for our bone density.
So I have arrived on Regent Street, as it was known, New Street actually, back in the day, in the early 1800s when this was all built, on a very rainy, cold, dull Monday morning. It's very beautiful around here. John Nash created this terrace, actually, where Acacia Spa is, that we're heading down to in a moment. But the reason it's really interesting, it was very ahead of its time, because John Nash, this wonderful architect and designer, created this beautiful sweeping colonnade that is now part of which is the Café Royale. And it really was ahead of its time, because it was, London wasn't as sort of unified and organised. So even though this hotel has had an amazing refurb 5 years ago, it has been around for a long time. So come in with me to the Acacia Holistic Spa. So many of these spas now, it's like getting into a very important private members club. I think part of this very protected entrance of these spas is part of the psychological ritual of leaving that noise and stress outside. So here we find ourselves in a very beautiful stairwell. Lots of spas in cities, especially a city like London, are underground because, of course, 50 years ago, spas weren't being automatically built in the plans. So in order to bring in these well-being havens, they've had to go underground. That's the space to create the spas. So we're going down lovely marble steps. Beautiful gold balustrades and into warm flickering candles, of course, cozy cream marble, modern straight lines, and of course pink beautiful orchids. Hello, I'm Suzanne. Hi, we have come to have a very special treatment today. Poetry in Water. Is that really the name?
It is indeed.
Okay. We have Claire Sanderson from Women's Health, who is the editor. And I think this is going to be quite a challenging treatment for Claire. For someone who's had it, I know it is wonderful, fabulous. And of course, Steve, Carl, is he here already? Are they together? Are they doing all the forms?
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay, so down and down, more steps, even lower into the depths of London. Now we've got a beautiful swimming pool. Now, see, what's really interesting about these places, the moment you get here, you do feel like you're on holiday. There's the pool, there's the loungers, swathes of marble everywhere. It's a bit of a labyrinth. So walking around to where the treatment rooms are. Now, Claire Sanderson is joining me today. She is the editor of Women's Health magazine. Claire is an absolute expert on women's health, as you'd imagine being the editor of such a magazine. But not just the physical side. What is fascinating about Claire is she is into the mental side of health as much as she is physical. She's from Wales, very down to earth. She says it as it is. So I thought it'd be brilliant to get her here to talk to us today, but to have a treatment that is going to really challenge her. It's called Poetry in Water, and it is a kind of, if you can imagine, yoga while you're held with someone in the water, is the only way I can describe it. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Suzanne.
How are you?
Very good, thank you. Very excited about today.
I'm excited and a bit nervous, I have to be honest.
Well, I'm actually a bit anxious, which goes against what this is trying to achieve.
Well, it is, but I think if we're honest about it, what these treatments are designed to do is release tension and anxiety in the body. And I don't think anyone that doesn't hold that, you wouldn't worry about it being released in a treatment like this. You know, it's not just a regular massage where you can come get some nice oils. It's quite an intimate treatment.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
Yes, well, look, I don't know too much about it yet. So.
Well, that's all for the surprise. Come on down, because I want you to meet Steve, who's going to be doing your treatment.
Thank you.
Hello, Steve.
Hi.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I wish it was me getting in the water today, but it's not. It's Claire. So can you just tell us a little bit about the treatment, Steve? What's Claire letting herself in for today?
The main key of the treatment is very much about letting go and really exploring natural movement. So in our day-to-day life, you know, we're accustomed to very specific movements, which tend to be very repetitive. And on top of that, we do our sports, which also are based on certain patterns, and all our movement activities are based on patterns. So here, it's all about going away from all those specific patterns and exploring really authentic movement. So you'll be floating in warm water, you have to do nothing at all, and just observe how your body is going to very slowly start unwinding. The water is great because it'll augment that kind of unwinding, so there'll be a bit of movement coming through. And then I'll be able to listen to that quality of movement, and I'll be able to follow and augment and just trace that organic movement that's happening in the body. But it's very much involuntary, spontaneous. And you'll see that the mind will come in, it'll want to control, it'll want to say, oh, there's a little twitch here, and then you want to control it, because that's what the mind does. So I would encourage you to just notice that and just go with however the body is responding. And from then on, you know, the movement may start moving. The body may start moving quite dynamically. It'll want to start stretching, curling in, back opening, in which case I'll follow those patterns. It may also be very slow and meditative.
Is the letting go bit scaring you?
Yeah, the letting go bit is something I really struggle with. So I train a lot, as you know, but as a result, I've got injuries and muscle soreness.
Yeah.
So this is something I desperately need, but never ever do.
Yeah.
I don't even go for, if I'm going for a massage, it has to be a sports massage, deep tissue, agony.
Course, so all performance based. You're not looking through the face mask with your phone, checking your emails while you're having a massage, are you?
Well, I'm
would you like to if you could?
I would, yeah, if I could, I would do. Yeah, I'm never off.
Yeah, but that's what I think is going to be really interesting today, Claire, because you're so dynamic, you're so successful, you do an amazing job of editing a very successful magazine, which is not easy these days, as we all know. So, and a bit like me when I got in that pool, the physical thing is one, how do I let go? I'm with this lovely man who I'm having this treatment that I'm not, don't know what's going on. Oh, and my mind's coming in. And so I think it's going to be a wonderful physical and mental experience for you, and I can't wait to hear what you think of it. So we're going to let you get in the water, which, by the way, is a beautiful rectangular, fabulous private. Now, would you call it a Watsu pool, Steve? Because I know Watsu is a slightly different treatment.
It's more craniosacral therapy than Watsu, in fact, but involving movement.
And also some shiatsu in the water, which, of course, what Watsu really is, isn't it? So there will be some massage as well. There will be some handwork as well as floating Claire around in the water.
Yeah, there may be. Not always. It's really intuitive. It's really particular to the person. You know, I may go very deep into the tissue and may even do a deep tissue massage. But I have a feeling it's not what you'll need, actually. Because that's what you think you want. But we want the body to really engage slowly.
Yeah, so you talk to the body by the sound, by the feel of the body in the water, don't you? Which is, so anyway, I'm not going to talk anymore. Okay. I'm going to let you get on with it.
Okay
thank you, Suzanne.
Shall I just get in?
Thank you.
I'm trying to talk very quietly because Claire has just completed the treatment and Steve has brought her to the side. Okay.
At the same time, just slowly starting to sense the weight of your body and your feet. The wall behind your back. Just imagine you want to press the floor with your feet, pressing your back against the wall, just sensing more of the weight of your body, sensing gravity pushing you down, taking a few deep inhales and long exhales, sensing the lengthening of your spine upwards and downwards. Sensing your muscle tone, the fluidity in the body, and also the stability. On your next exhale, you can start pressing the floor with your feet even more until your legs start straightening up. And then in your own time, you can just open your eyes.
Really relax, yeah. It was a surprise. Yes. Yes, I definitely wandered towards my daily tasks, but I was able to come back into quite a relaxed state quite quickly. I could feel my arms twitching, which I was told was something could happen. And I know that I have a really stiff back and neck, and I've been told when I go to for massages that your back barely moves. So. It was quite a different feeling to feel my spine moving in waves almost, which I don't think that's a natural movement for me because it's all quite stiff from being at a desk all day. And then
even being on a massage table, you're still on a very hard, straight surface.
Yes.
So I don't know about you, but getting in the water, letting it sort of take its natural shape and let the water be the massage bed in a way, and
yeah.
Steve... To me, I love that, and I felt like I was in an ocean. I didn't realise, my mind played a trick on me that I could have been in the sea, you know, in a massive pool. Did you find that?
Well, I certainly got disorientated. I didn't realise I was here. I thought I was the other side of the pool when we'd finished. So
yeah.
I'd gone around. Yeah, it's a lovely, weird sensation,
yeah.
Unusual sensation, not a normal,
yeah.
Everyday experience.
Exactly.
So I would definitely recommend it.
So, Steve, I certainly know from writing my book, Bathe, and loving water treatments, that it has been used, water, in lots of different types of body work, and even the conventional medicine system recognises it.
Mm.
But from an emotional point of view,
it
can be pretty powerful, can't it? Do you feel people really open up when they have this kind of treatment compared to, say, a massage?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, the element of vulnerability is huge in this treatment. And, you know, it's always very interesting. When somebody starts having an emotional experience during the treatment, it's very common for them to either, you know, start laughing, you know, almost hysterically, like even a nervous laugh, or just a very huge laughter.
Okay.
But then they'll start crying as well.
Okay.
Or they may start crying and then they'll finish off laughing. So you start experiencing the whole range of emotions, like the whole spectrum of emotions you experience. And that's really interesting because to me, the way I see it is, it's all coming from one place. It's, you know, whether it is sadness, whether it is joy, whether it is anger, one of the more difficult emotions that people open up to a stranger. It's all coming from the same place, in a way.
Which is where? Spiritual? Psychological?
That's a very good question.
And
yeah.
Is it, you believe it's the water allowing?
Yeah,
allowing that to come out, that maybe other treatments doesn't quite unlock it in the same way.
Yeah, it's a whole blend of things, you know? The simplicity of touch from the practitioner, just the presence, the listening. I'm here just listening to you in a very neutral way, holding space for you, for any of your experience, without any agenda of doing something or moving the body into certain
goal.
Manipulations. No, just a sense of being. But it's a very pure kind of intimacy, I would say. And it's also important not to push people into that, you know? You're welcome to travel as deep
and it
as
doesn't
you
mean
want.
It hasn't worked just because you don't have a big emotional response.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's beautiful, and it's, I mean, even to watch it, Lisa, my producer and I think we're feeling a bit sort of chilled out just being in the space and watching it. So thank you very much. And I'm glad she enjoyed it.
Yeah.
She might have hated it.
Yes, and that's another thing. You know, as any holistic approach, I cannot also guarantee that they'll come out loving the treatment. You know, once in a while, people get in touch with parts of themselves that are not so happy or so positive. They may get in touch with a shadow element, and that's sometimes a tricky aspect in a spa environment, you know? Then I have to explain, well, you know, the whole point is to really get in touch with yourself, to reconnect. I'm not providing an experience of escape. I'm providing an experience of for you to get in touch with yourself.
And no hiding from those, because they're part of us, and we need to acknowledge them, I feel, anyway. Yeah. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you,
really, really appreciate your
Thanks
time.
So
see you soon. So here we are, dry, back in normal clothes, sat in the sanctuary still of the Café Royal.
Yes, beautiful.
Yeah, isn't it lovely?
Yes.
Got a coffee.
Yes.
Had a nibble. So how are you feeling?
Very relaxed and chilled.
Yeah.
More chilled than I can remember being in recent months, if not years. It was
amazing.
A weirdly pleasant, relaxing, lovely treatment. So thank you very much.
Oh, pleasure. And I've said to other of my amazing podcast guinea pigs for this, I don't want to tell you too much. Please don't look too much into it, because I do want to get that natural response. Obviously, people need to know a little bit what you're letting yourself in for. But is it what you thought it would be from the little you knew?
Well, absolutely not, because hilariously, I genuinely thought somebody was going to be reading poetry to me in water. Because I didn't...
A typical Welsh girl.
Yeah, I didn't read into it, partly because I'm so busy. So I wasn't expecting it to be a sort of massage stroke physio experience in water, so it was lovely, because I am quite an active person, so I liked the fact that there was points where he was manipulating my spine and it got a bit uncomfortable because he was releasing it. I quite liked that there was a bit of that in there as well, and it wasn't all just moving around the water, but that in itself was beautiful. And I had the support around my head and my legs, so it really did feel like I didn't have to make any effort at all. I was completely weightless. And then as the treatment went on, I could feel myself relaxing more.
And you had floats under the knees, did you? Under your head, yeah.
Yeah, my head, I thought it was my thighs, it might have been my knees.
Yes.
It's such a weird experience that you become a bit disorientated, so I don't really know where the floats were, to be honest. I just know that they were supporting my leg somewhere, and he had one on my head, and then he removed it from my head when he was manipulating my neck, and he was supporting me with his hand.
Yeah, so it's very powerful, isn't it? Well, I'm really glad you enjoyed it, because, and we'll get on to you and some of your mental health issues a bit later, because I know, and that's why I was so excited to have you here on the podcast, because not only are you a wealth of knowledge, but you've had, you know, personal experiences of the more emotional mental health issues.
Yes.
You're doing an amazing job with women's health, bringing the emotional as well as the physical health into play, which, as we know, is very important.
Thank you.
So the sort of dynamic person that you are, would you say then it's more the emotional work of letting go and relaxation that you struggle with,
yes,
as opposed to the physical stuff of looking after yourself?
Absolutely. So the physical side of things, I love exercise, absolutely love it.
Are you
always
just saying that because you're the editor of
No, genuinely, genuinely.
Have you always loved it?
Always loved it. I rode competitively at university. I've always trained consistently, even when I was partying. You know, and I was not an angel in my 20s and early 30s.
You're in the right place, you know. You know the history of this place, Oscar Wilde and
I heard all of those guys, absence,
and, you know, seriously hedonistic. So offsetting it with the Zen spa side.
Apparently the spa used to be a nightclub in the 90s.
Yeah, but do you not feel, and I don't know whether I said this earlier or I certainly thought it, and I always think it when I come here, it's almost got that slightly Ibiza underground, you know, vibe of some stuff's happened here.
Well, it's certainly subterranean, isn't it? And you come down and it's a bit of a shock to find somewhere so dimly lit and quiet. And
which is, for me, part of the healing. And what I love about spa, and I don't know if you think this or agree with this because of work or your past experiences, but they're not just pampering, fluffy facial places anymore, are they? And you've experienced that this morning. There's some serious healing work going on in spas now, and I don't know how aware people are of that.
Well, you and I met at Global Wellness Summit last October, which is a gathering of all the leading wellness people in the world. And one of the big trends that they were talking about there was how spas globally are becoming a bit medical. So you've got some of the top spas in the world that now have top consultant doctors working there. So you can go there to learn about your physical and mental health and really speak to people who are medically qualified, as well as people who do amazing treatments as well. And you can get health checks done and body scans. And it used to be that massages were a bit sort of, you lay on a table and somebody just sort of rubbed your skin lightly. But now you know that the people
I've
doing your
treatments...
I've
got a good friend who'll do that for me for free.
Well, yeah, exactly. but you know, like the Steve who did my treatment today, he was picking up in all the stiffness of my neck and he was manipulating my back, because you can tell he's properly trained in dealing with those type of issues with your body. So it's not just a place where you go to have a nice facial.
No, you can still do that if you want to. And I'm sure this place is one of those brilliant places at Glass of champagne, facial, but it's incredible what is available now in spas.
Yes.
And also we were discussing it's actually, I wonder as well, the spiritual side, is spa the new church? Because there's certainly, I mean, someone like Steve and certainly other holistic body workers, a lot of emotions come up, a lot of stuff that we keep down, we suppress, we run away from.
Yep.
And I think it's a very interesting experience to have, whether it's poetry in water. So yes, although you did have some sound healing, but no actual poetry. You know, allowing stuff to come up because, you know, and let's talk about you. You have suffered depression.
Yes.
Pretty much most of your life, would you say? Or?
Yes, in hindsight. I ended up in hospital twice when I was 27 and 28 for 7 weeks the first time and 4 weeks the second time. So that's when it really came to a head. But I think, looking back, I've lived with low level depression my whole life.
Really?
It all got life threateningly worrying when I was 27, and if I hadn't gone into hospital I may well have taken my own life.
So we're talking potential suicide?
Yes,
right.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That level of depression.
Yes, yes. One of the reasons why I went into hospital in the end was I was planning to take my own life, and I'd already been told by my psychiatrist, you need to come into hospital, but I wasn't sectioned, you know, because you have to be a danger to society. He wasn't sectioning me, so I refused, saying, no one wants to go into a psychiatric hospital. And then a week later of really orchestrating how I was going to take my own life, I realised something needs to be done here. So I went into hospital because I was fantasising about crashing my own car. At that point, I was fantasising to crash my car, not to kill myself, but to hurt myself enough to take me away from life, if
yes,
that makes sense,
absolutely.
To allow me
let
to
you out
yes,
for a while.
Exactly. And then that escalated into me thinking about I was going to take pills to take an overdose. But I was so paranoid, which is a symptom of depression.
Right.
I was convinced everyone was talking about me. Everyone knew what was going on. Everyone. So I was too paranoid to actually go in and buy the tablets from the pharmacist, because I thought the pharmacist would know what I wanted them for and therefore wouldn't give them to me. So actually the paranoia sort of saved me, yes.
Wow.
And then I had enough self-awareness to think, this can't go on.
Yeah.
So I ended up going into hospital on a Tuesday.
So you were then, it's interesting what you say about the fantasizing about hurting yourself so that you then get help. I mean, it's the ultimate cry for help, isn't it? And And it's interesting, you know, thinking about today and thinking about my life and other people I know, I think I know more people that have had depression than not. Yeah. I mean, I really do, and myself included. And it's the weird low to moderate where you're not bad enough to be getting proper inverted comma help. Mm. But things just aren't quite right.
Yes.
You sort of wave the little white flags, but no one's really picking up on them. And I think that's very, very common. And we're actually seeing statistics now, and again, we'll get to that later, as maybe some of the factors now in modern life that are making that more prevalent. Mm. So, but your situation was very extreme. Mm. You were in hospital, and what sort of therapy were they giving you? Or was it pretty much very strong antidepressants?
Very strong anti-anxiety drugs, sleeping pills, probably more medication that I'm comfortable with, but you just kind of do what you're told. Mm. But it was daily therapy, so cognitive behavioural therapy, and also just sitting in a room with people who have similar mental illnesses or different, but all mentally ill, and talking and just being, and group therapy and listening. And what hospital did for me, it allowed me to check out of my life. Because my life at the time, I was a national newspaper journalist. I always had a very successful career. I went into national newspapers when I was 21, but I also worked for tabloid newspapers.
The Valley Girl went to the Sun, didn't she?
Mirror.
Would you mirror first?
Yeah, I have been at the Sun, but it was the Mirror, and the Sunday Mirror and the Sunday People. And it was at a time when tabloid newspapers were like the Wild West. You know, it's all improved now, but asked to do things that ethically I wasn't comfortable with, probably compromised my own safety.
Yes.
And in the end, I think it all got too much of me. And it was a very unhealthy lifestyle anyway. You are travelling here, there and everywhere, all over the world. Sounds exciting, but then you're not looking after yourself physically. You're drinking too much.
I was going to say, there's a huge drinking culture. Yeah, because actually, you have to numb yourself, don't you, to what you're dealing with.
Yeah, huge drink. And also, you kind of drink to keep up with the blokes because it's a very male-dominant environment, so you have to be seen to go to the pub on a Friday night if you want to speak to the people that matter, kind of thing. And then when you're staying in hotels and it's all paid for, you have a glass of wine to the room and, you know, all this type of thing, and it all just spiraled out of control.
But do you think you were attracted, I mean, because you're from Wales, obviously, beautiful accent, do you think you went into that type of quite high stress, high adrenal job because you had this predisposition to being depressed, so you needed this excitement and this stress to almost keep you up? Or do you think, because it's very common, isn't it, for people that are depressed to be quite high achievers? Mm. So, but what comes first? Is it the depression and I need to be boosted and lifted, or I'm doing a job that's making me so out of kilter, I'm now depressed?
You're right in that there's been research saying that the people who want to achieve, the most driven people in society, are the most prone to depression, because in theory they're always disappointed with themselves because they're never good enough. And that's absolutely me. Absolutely. I'm never ever happy with my lot. I always think I can be better. I always think I can be stronger, slimmer, faster, a better boss, a better mum, a better wife.
Where does that come from?
I think it comes from not wanting to live my adult life where I grew up. I think I wanted better. I wanted out. I didn't want to stay in the valleys. I wanted out. My parents are still there. I love going home, but I wanted to leave. And I was determined to come to London and just be better, achieve more. I don't want to say be better because that's disrespectful to my family and loved ones, but I just wanted to achieve more. But I've always been the even when I was 6 or 7, you know, very determined, very competitive, and I can see it in my daughter now. She is my daughter in every way. She looks the spitting image of me, but she's got all my characteristics, which are difficult to manage at this age.
Of course.
But I actually think all power to her, because she's got all my temperament and stubbornness and competitive nature. She's very bright. But she's been brought up in a very different environment to what I was brought up. I was brought up in a lower working class background where there was no emphasis put on school. No one ever read a book to me. There was no pressure to do homework. And that's not a criticism. Mm. It's just an observation of what life was like in the valleys then, you know, when you're brought up by parents who are low-skilled, work in factories, you know, they didn't know any better. Whereas my daughter is now being brought up by ambitious parents. My husband's a journalist as well, so we're both very persuasive.
So how do you, and again, I really want to talk a little bit about what's happening with millennials and in particular females with depression, anxiety, insomnia, self-harming. You know, we need to touch on that because you as an editor on a magazine are doing some really great work in that area. But how do you then feel? You don't want your daughter to have experienced what you've experienced.
No.
You don't want her to have depression so bad that she would consider taking her own life.
Yes.
But you want her to be her most successful version.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that? Do you teach her mental health skills?
I think I need to instill confidence in her because no one ever instilled confidence in me. So I lacked confidence and I still do now.
Mm.
People would struggle to believe that I get quite easily intimidated by situations and people, but I also have the balls, for want of a better phrase, to just shake that off and just get on with it. But I'm hoping I can instill confidence in Nell that she believes that she's deserving of everything that she can achieve, because I've always had the feeling of, I can't believe they've let me in the front door.
Well, imposter syndrome, like on steroids, right?
Yeah.
And when, because I relate to that as well, and I think for me, I got to where I am, if you're totally, literally off luck, hard work.
Well, yeah.
Luck comes into it, but maybe further down the line, absolute determination, passion. I didn't have anyone in the industry, no legs up the ladder. Do you think that, and I didn't go to university, and sometimes I feel, if I had a degree in journalism or something, maybe I could prove on a piece of paper that I'm good. Do you think that's, because I don't want to blame my parents, but is that a childhood thing? But surely you have to get to a certain stage where going, I've done it now, because I'm every day proving. And this could be people listening that work as a barista in a coffee shop to high-flying CEOs. I don't care. Mm. You know, success is not for me by how important your job is and how much you earn. It's how comfortable you are in your own skin.
Yeah.
So when do you think, I mean, and I'm asking myself this question as I ask you, when are you going to shake off that, you know, what helps you shake off that girl that doesn't feel she's good enough and isn't successful enough?
I think age helps. I think I'm more comfortable in being clear. The older I get, I'm less self-conscious about how I look, and the more successful, for instance, my brand is, then you have to start believing in it.
Absolutely.
But sadly, it's never going to go away. I'm always going to feel a bit inferior.
Yeah.
Always going to.
It's always going to. Okay, so then for you, with you do a lot of exercise.
Yes.
What else do you do to counteract the Claire that doesn't believe in herself, the Claire that's not good enough, with this amazing, confident, successful woman? What are you doing to bridge those two, other than exercise? And tell me, how much exercise do you do? Make me feel very, very unfit.
I train 6 days a week. So I do 2 sessions of Orange Theory, which is HIIT training, circuit training. It's 60-minute classes, really full-on rowing, spinning, weights. I do 2 sessions of weight training with my trainer, who's an Instagram star called Alice Living. She's also a columnist in Women's Health. She trains at Third Space, which is a gym in Soho. And I do 2 training sessions, I should say, with a trainer called Ashley Verma, and she's at Define on Great Portland Street, and that's a bar studio. And I love it because I had preconceptions that bar was, you know, ballet, only super elegant, bendy women can do it, when actually the type of bar she's doing, it's almost like bar cardio. And she does it with weights and on Bosu balls and core flights, which are like sliders, but that move in 360 directions. So it's quite a lot. But for me, I have to exercise.
Is that your medicine?
That is my medicine. Yeah. And I do struggle with body image. And if I eat food which is not what I feel is healthy, it affects me for the rest of the day. Like, I've just eaten a small muffin and I shouldn't have, because I know that will now bother me for the rest of the day. So the way I try and keep my mental health stable is to eat well and move more. And
yes.
And that's how I remain positive.
And so that's six days a week, so even on a Saturday. Do you have Sunday off, presumably? Is that
no, I train every Saturday and Sunday morning. Okay. There's Orange Theory's at the end of my road, which is fortunate.
Really?
Yeah, in Winchester.
You didn't move there because of the Winchester.
Well, I found it because I lived there. So I go on at 8 o'clock on a Saturday and a Sunday morning, so it's done. And the kids are fine, they're at home with my husband. And then I'll do four mornings a week in town.
And what about then, and you've just experienced it with the water treatment, but what about that slightly less dynamic, less goal-orientated side? How important do you think that is for our mental health and our general health?
It's very important, but I just don't do it. I wish I did, but for me, I need to change my mindset. I need to realise that actually that's as beneficial to me, if not more beneficial, than doing a 60-minute HIIT workout where I burn 500 calories. I need to adjust my mindset, especially at my age. I'm 40, I'm going into early menopause. I am in early menopause. So I've been told that I need to do more restorative type movement and exercise as opposed to cortisol releasing exercise,
yes,
which is full on 500 calories an hour.
Because actually the last thing you need in a way is more cortisol, but I get it in terms of almost like a natural antidepressant. You know, exercise is amazing. It should be prescribed, I think. I mean, it probably is in certain parts of the country now. But where do you think, when do you think you'll get to that part of your next tool to go in the toolkit? Is it going to be meditation? Is it going to be, you know, are there any techniques that you're looking to or have tried that work for you that you think are interesting?
Well, for me to do bar is a different type of exercise. Mm. So for me, it's too much of a stretch to say I'm going to meditate because I just don't think I can do it. I know everyone can, but I have the attention span of a gnat. I've got no patience whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I think I would struggle to do it. But when I started looking into bar, it's that's a slower, smaller movement. So for me, that's a calmer way to exercise. You know, even the weight training I do, it's very much sort of sets of eight with 2 minutes break in between. So it's not full on
pumping music and
yes,
jumping around.
Exactly. Yes.
A bit more focused, a bit more reflective.
Whereas now, 5 years ago, my exercise very much was spinning, rowing, HIIT training, anything that would leave me sometimes being sick.
Yes.
You know, I would push myself to that extent.
So it's slightly punishing, really, isn't
it? Yes. So I have evolved.
Mm.
So for me, that's my form of self-care. If I had more time, I would love to supplement it with things like yoga. I have done Pilates. I love Pilates, although it's very expensive, reformer Pilates. Not every, you know, I can't.
Yeah.
I'm a mum of two. I can't really afford to pay that. But I do work full-time. I've got two kids and two children. So when I do exercise, I want to do things that I enjoy.
Yeah,
and
make you feel good.
Yes.
And going back to, you know, because we talked before this about early menopause, women's health in terms of hormones. I mean, it's a minefield, isn't it?
Oh, it's an absolute minefield. Now, I started going into the menopause when I was 39, unbeknown to me, because I had all these symptoms such as depression, PMT that was off the scale, whereas I've gone through life pretty much on an even keel when it comes to PMT. I've lived with low level depression, but
so
I didn't
again,
have
you
massive
that, yeah.
mood swings around the time of the month. I was getting painful breasts that were so painful. They were like when you're in your early pregnancy, you know how when you're first pregnant and your breasts are
painful.
Agony. This is what was happening. My cycle, which had been like clockwork my whole life, was going skew-iff. So much so that I thought I must be pregnant, even though my husband's had a vasectomy. So that would have been a challenging one to explain.
Yeah.
yeah. But I still didn't really join the dots. And then I went out for dinner one night with a friend of mine who's a doctor. She's an anaesthetist. It's not her area of expertise. And she said, you're perimenopausal. They're all the symptoms. So I went to my GP and I was basically told, okay, go away, you're a bit too young, come back.
Like, didn't
the response
blood test.
No, nothing.
Gosh.
So then I'm part of a government task force on women's health issues. The Undersecretary of State for Health, Jackie Doyle Price, asked me to be part of it and is chaired by her and Leslie Reagan, who's the president of the Royal College of Gynecologists and Obstetricians. And Sally Davis is on there, the chief medical officer, basically the most senior medical people in the country. And each task force is focused on an area of women's health. So one of them was on menopause. And I went along and they started talking about HRT. And now I had been told by various people that I can't go on HRT because my mother had breast cancer when she was 48.
Which is this huge issue, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
The risk
Everyone
factor.
Just makes the link. But I listened to some of the leading doctors in the country talk about HRT and its benefits and the actual nonsense that it causes breast cancer, because sadly there's a high percentage of us are going to get breast cancer regardless of whether we're on HRT or not. And Leslie Reagan from the Royal College of Gynecologists and Obstetricians said to me that the misinformation out there about HRT that has led only 10% of women to be taking HRT is the biggest travesty for women's health of our generation. So I was
And you trust these people are looking at the side effects, the
yeah.
downside of taking, obviously,
absolutely,
hormones, because and we're living so much longer.
Yeah, we're living so much longer. We live longer than men. And but what I've learned is that we live less time independently. And by that, I mean, we may live longer, but we become dependent. And one of the reasons for that is that our bones, osteoporosis, our lean muscle mass decreases rapidly because women, say over the age of 40, don't realise or have never really understood the benefits of weight training. Fortunately, the younger generations now
Thank
are all
goodness,
about
yeah.
strong, not skinny. But the slightly older women are very much of the step class and the church hall mentality, burning calories and I'll go for a walk type
yes.
approach to exercise. So when we get older, we fall and then we lose our confidence. But if we were to take HRT, that it does wonders for our bone density.
Mm.
Not only that, the biggest killer of women is heart disease. It's not cancer.
Mm,
Everyone thinks it's cancer.
Absolutely.
No, it's heart disease. Once you go into menopause, you are more predisposed to heart disease. But if you take hormones, that reduces the risk of that as well. So I was speaking to one of the country's leading menopause specialists, a woman called Dr. Louise Newsom, and she invited me to her clinic, which is one of the beauty fortunates of my job, because she's a private doctor.
Is she very expensive for people
I,
to
I imagine.
Go
into,
yeah.
I
yeah.
freely admit I didn't pay. She saw
yes.
me because I met her and
yes.
she could see that I was a woman in need. And she's now prescribed me HRT, and I'm on HRT. I'm on estrogen and progesterone. I've only
you
been
feel
on
better
it,
for it?
I've only on it 3 weeks,
okay.
so I don't know yet. She says, you know, I report back in 3 months.
And please do more. Will you do pieces for the magazine?
Yes, absolutely.
You're going
well,
to do more on that.
Yeah. Well, we did one on perimenopause
mm.
when I first realised this was happening, because I felt I had a duty to do so, because up until that point, no one had. I'd never heard the phrase perimenopause.
Yeah.
Even though I'm the editor of Women's Health, never heard the phrase.
Which means before you're going.
Yeah.
To
before.
Menopause,
yes.
Yeah.
yeah. But I'm now, because I have so many symptoms, the hot flushes, I've been having anxiety attacks, lack of sleep. I'm going into early menopause, and early menopause is when you go into it under the age of 45. So,
yeah.
And it's fine, I'm comfortable with it because
yes.
I am taking HRT. I'm hoping that will reduce my risk of osteoporosis and heart disease. In fact, I had tests recently at the doctor, and my heart health is brilliant, and I've got low cholesterol and all this, so I'm doing everything right.
Yes.
But it's a travesty that you basically have to be white and middle class
mm.
to get any sort of sensible menopause advice, because
yeah.
if you go to your GP, which is the only port of call for a lot of women, many of them are so pushed for time, and this is
yes.
not a criticism of the NHS, but they're so pushed for time.
And budgets? I mean, they can't prescribe everyone it, can they, presumably?
Well, I think a lot of them as well, they don't have time to research. They are also, sadly, fallen under the misconception that there are risks, and these risks outweigh the benefits of HRT. And there needs to be an education piece within NHS for GPs
yeah.
to become more skilled in giving women advice, because what is happening is a lot of these women are presenting to the GP with these symptoms, not joining the dots, and they're being diagnosed with depression and put on antidepressants.
Yeah, and that again is just a whole, you know, a whole different story. We could talk for hours about menopause, maybe we should another time. But the other thing I just wanted to touch on quickly, because I know a lot of listeners to this podcast are in the millennial age bracket as well, so the younger end, but you know, the pressure on that age group in terms of anxiety, mental health, because of social media, unrealistic comparisons, unrealistic lifestyles, etc. Is there a good port of call for those people to go to help them with their, I don't know, millennial dilemmas? Because they should be very happy, that age group, shouldn't they? I mean, they are very fortunate time of life. There's not wars raging, there's health information, there's food, there's money, but they're very unhappy. Mm. Is there a good port of call that you can recommend? Other than Women's Health, obviously. Not really. Well, it's tricky, isn't it?
It is tricky, yes. I mean, at Women's Health, we celebrate women. We look at health very holistically, so we have a big mental health section. We did research last year, and the core pillar women come to Women's Health was nutrition, the second was mental health.
Okay.
And third was fitness, which was surprising. So it shows that there's this appetite out there to learn more about your mental health. Yeah.
And there's a lot nutrition can do as well for any health situation. So that's really good news. Yes. So, 'cause I'm a massive advocate on what you eat.
Yeah.
I think it's the first thing you can control.
Yeah.
Then you can start working on the mind and the mental and spiritual side. And then of course fitness and the movement side. Mm. So brilliant. And I'm pleased to, and I don't say this to many people because I've been doing this long enough, I don't have to, and there's not many people I want to say it to, but please keep up the good work.
Oh, well, thank you.
Loving the magazine, loving the social platform, which again, we need to not spend too much time on it. Mm. And I'm so thrilled that you came today and took time out of your really busy, demanding schedule to have poetry and water at the Café Royal at the Acacia Holistic Centre, and that you actually enjoyed it.
Oh, it was lovely.
And they've invited you back again, by the way, if you want to come for another treatment with Steve.
Oh, wonderful.
And I will be happy knowing, I can go to sleep tonight knowing I helped relax the editor of Women's Health.
Oh, thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
No, thank you very much, Claire.
It's been such a treat.
In the next episode, I'll be chatting, or should I say sweating, with Louise Parker of Louise Parker Method. She's a personal trainer, a weight loss expert, and we're going to be having a Turkish hammam together at the Four Seasons Hotel 10 Trinity Square.
It's super hot, and I love hot water. That is proper hot. It's wonderful. Oh, I'd like this every morning. If I could have this every morning, please.
I love baths. I have a bath every evening. I love the ritual of it. But actually, it's probably what I do after the bath that I love more. It's that feeling afterwards. Mm. It's a bit like the work exercise. I don't particularly enjoy the workouts at all. But it's No. I mean, my method I devised for, you know, people like me, people who didn't want to be spending hours needlessly working out, it was about taking, you know, a simple route, a direct route. It's about doing the minimum amount you can get away with to be functionally fit and healthy. And
you've not always been in your best shape, have you?
No, I was, you know, I was always chubby. But I started dieting at 14 at a really young age, which is obviously why I'm so anti-dieting. Mm. I was on a diet for 10 years constantly. I didn't have an enormous amount to lose, but I don't think it's really about that. It was always a couple of dress sizes. I mean, the most important thing that we do is what we do every day. And it's not what people talk about. All people talk about is, hi, what do you do for a living? Mm. Hi, how big is your house? Hi, how many Birkins have you got? It's crap, we've got one body. Like, it's just no joke. Mm. And when you hit your 40s, I'm like, right, okay, and it's gonna be hopefully in really good health for another 40 years. How do I want that to be?
Thank you for listening to the Bathe podcast. You can always jump onto the website lovetobathe.co.uk, where you'll find lots of other tips and tricks and other bathing recipes and therapies. Thank you very much to the Acacia Centre and Spa, and to my publishers Bonnier Books, and of course to my producer Lisa Mannering.